Making healthcare budget cuts personal, nursing charter schools, Indiana nurses put education first, and we're going to wrap up with part two of our series on the physiology of pain. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and we've got a lot of good stuff coming up for you in this episode. Before we move on into that, get into our news, and later on into the remainder of our two-part segment on the physiology of pain, I want to remind you to follow up on all of the information you find here over at nursingshow.com. There's resources there for you to follow up, links in the show notes for every episode on the news items discussed. The tip segments always provide additional resource links so that you can follow up on the information here and see how it applies specifically to your career and focus in nursing. So I hope you'll follow up on that and take care of doing that at nursingshow.com. You can also subscribe to our email newsletter and get those links sent to you directly by email, and there's links there to our Facebook fan page as well. So take advantage of the resources over at nursingshow.com. I also want to thank all of you for getting in touch with me. I get emails from listeners every single week, and this week is no different. So keep those emails coming in. They're great ideas for other episodes, links to news items, whatever might cross your path. Feel free to send them in here to the Nursing Show email address at nursingshow@gmail.com, and I will get back to you. I return every email that we get. I like to respond back and let you know I got the email and maybe have a few comments for you. So keep those emails coming. This is a community effort here, folks, and I really like to hear from each of you because it lets me know what you want to hear more of. It also lets me know what you like in the show, what you, links and news items are catching your eye as a nurse. All of that's important. This isn't just the Jamie show. This is the nursing show, and that's for all of us, and I hope that it continues to provide that resource for you. That's it. We're going to go ahead and jump into the news here, coming right up. The news items this week, I'll kick off with the first of the three items and look at an article I found over at Reuters.com. Interestingly enough, even though Reuters is traditionally thought of as a British news service, it's actually looking at recent health deficit spending discussions here in the United States, looking at the ongoing federal budget battles. What are we going to cut back on? What are we going to lose in the way of services and resources and funding at the federal and state levels? And one of the feared cuts is looking like it might come in some places in Medicaid or Medicare cuts, and what that might mean. Interestingly enough, a lot of supporters of the resources there, including healthcare providers and hospital systems that bill Medicaid and Medicare, are all really pointing out that cutting back on those services and resources could have a huge impact on the overall health and resources of a community. Looking at the numbers of people that are under or uninsured and that they may have access to additional funding resources for their health care through Medicaid, or perhaps they're disabled and use Medicaid as their primary health resource, and of course our elderly with Medicare, cutting back on those things is going to leave a significant amount of the population without health care, especially those that already have ongoing health issues that are under treatment. When they suddenly lose these resources, does this mean they stop cancer treatments? Does it mean they stop seeking assistance to manage things like diabetes or other long-term health care issues? And the article really does a good job of pointing out that there's many facets to this issue, because not just are patients affected, but eventually you can look and see that there are people like physicians, other people that bill these services, hospital systems, nurse practitioners, all of whom could stand to lose money if these cutbacks include cuts to the approved levels of reimbursement for professionals in the medical systems that are providing services. And that could result in cutbacks in staffing, could be resulting in fewer people hired, positions going unfilled, and a lot of other issues. So just important to look at these types of issues from all sides. They could affect you and your job. They could affect performance raises. They could affect a lot of things. And ultimately, we need to just be aware of the issues. And look, this is not a simple solution to any of this. The budget needs to get worked out in some way, shape, or form. And everybody has their pet project they'd like to cut. And for some people, that is some of the healthcare services and programs out there as a viable option. For others, there are other things they'd like to see cut back on. Only way we are going to get that figured out is if we all lend our voices to the discussion on what's important to us. And so, as always in these situations, I don't like to take sides. I just like to urge you to have your voice heard. I think that nurses bring a unique perspective, no matter what your political flavor of the month is, as far as where you fall on the spectrum. But certainly, you can certainly lend your ideas, your thoughts, and the things that are important to you to the process and let voices be heard. So often we sit back and let things just happen to us. And this is one of those situations we don't have to let that occur. So whatever the case may be, you know, lend your voice to what the discussion is going on and what should be important parts of that discussion. Interesting look at one place in Providence, Rhode Island, looking at putting together a specific part of their high school system is going to be a charter school aimed at preparing students for nursing school and healthcare careers. Interesting look at this. I've heard a lot about different charter schools, but to have a charter school that really says we are going to prepare people with the math, the science, the other background, and the preparatory courses that will allow them to be more successful in college when they go into these health fields is a way for this state to provide a way to improve pass-fail rates, to improve the numbers of people getting into and succeeding in nursing school, and ultimately improving the numbers of nurses they have at their disposal to fill vacant positions and fill up what they anticipate will be continued slowdown of available slots for nurses available for the slots that are there to fill. We just got done talking about there could be cutbacks, but in the spite of everything I've seen, there's still an ongoing nursing shortage. And as these types of decisions are made, nurses are going to be a premium commodity out there in the workplace. And certainly we can take advantage of that, but we also need to make sure that there are people coming along to fill the positions. The average age of nurses in the mid-50s. That means in the next 10 years, a huge number of nurses are going to just start deciding to retire if they haven't already. Certainly many nurses may start to move away from the bedside as larger percentages of nurses move on into management roles and other nursing fields and career paths. This gives a way to provide the younger, newer nurses coming into the field a way to be successful and get through nursing school the best possible chance to pass their boards and get out into the workforce. So it's neat to see this. Interestingly enough, another state had a different way of looking at this. Indiana nurses getting together and putting together something called the Indiana Center for Nursing, a nonprofit group that's focus, according to the dean at the Indiana University School of Nursing, says the group wants to make Indiana a magnet state for nurses, a place where nurses want to come to advance their careers and to stay and work in their careers. And an interesting look is they're anticipating as well a competition for the available trained nursing staff, and they're trying to put together an environment in their state that supports nurses in both in entry-level advancement and education and also ongoing and continuing education and resources to make Indiana, again, a magnet state for nurses. Very interesting approach. So I urge you to check out these articles in the show notes and let me know what you think. I think there's some interesting things going on out there as people try different solutions to fill the gaps in their nursing availability and to include and continue to increase their ability to graduate high-quality nursing students. We'll move into this week's tip of the week, and we're going to pick up where we left off last week in part two of our segment on the physiology of pain and some considerations for pain management, thinking about how pain actually works in the body. And this is all part of a series I thought of last month when I was talking to some pain management nurses doing my show over at nursingnoteslive.com for the Johnson & Johnson campaign for Nursing's Future. You can check out those pain management episodes, both a panel discussion on pain management and a get-to-know nurse segment with one of those pain management nurses. Great discussion over there and great resources, and you can find those over at nursingnoteslive.com. But we're going to go ahead and jump into part two of the physiology of pain. We're really going to be looking at how we manage and interpret pain now and think about what happens when we get a pain signal into our brain and what happens physiologically after that and how that long-term effect can occur that I was talking about in last week's show. So let's pick up here with part two of our physiology of pain, and we're going to move on into talking a little bit more about how we perceive pain and how we manage that patient's perception of their pain through numerous different techniques and interventions. So what do we do when we perceive pain? What happens? Well, there's lots of things that affect how we perceive pain. And as I said in last episode, in the beginning of this segment, there are many things about our past experiences with pain that affect how we perceive pain, and not just psychologically perceive pain, but how we perceive pain on the physiological level. And this is because of that modulating effect that I talked about in the previous segment, about how modulating, how the perception of pain then modulates how the periphery experiences pain in relation to that injury, but also can also, it appears in some research that this is an ongoing process, that pain is then perceived differently after every experience of pain. Pain's processed in the central nervous system in numerous locations. Some three primary locations include the medulla, the hypothalamus, and the cerebral cortex. Obviously, the cerebral cortex is where we are consciously perceiving pain, but it's important to notice that in the brainstem, in the medulla and the hypothalamus, that we are perceiving pain at a very central and unconscious level. And a lot of processing of that pain goes on in places that we don't have any conscious access to. So when we think about people's pain, we've really got to understand that every individual's pain is personal to them and their own experiences. And my experience with a broken arm and how I was able to manage that pain is going to be different from how you deal and manage with pain and something like a broken arm. And I should not be attaching my perceptions of pain and broken arm to you and your understanding of pain and a broken arm. I hope that makes sense to you. Now, again, I have a little drawing here, a picture we've put together. So if you're looking at the video version of this, you can look along with me. If you're listening to this, you know, I urge you to head over to nursingshow.com and watch the video of this particular episode. And just fast forward through to the tip segment if you want and check out the way I've drawn this. Hopefully it will make more sense to you. It helped me to draw this picture, so hopefully it'll help you to look at what I drew. You've got, again, we look back at the nociceptors, those nociceptic receptors of heat, pressure, and chemical receptors. They send that pain response once the certain threshold is reached. That threshold sends a level of pain response down based upon how much the threshold was exceeded. And in some cases, a reflex impulse may be sent back to say, hey, stupid, pull your hand out of the fire. Then that impulse is forwarded on to the brain, where it is processed in numerous locations around the brain. Then the next thing that occurs is a pain modulation reflex or return loop seems to occur. This is not well understood and is just starting to be studied. But it seems to be that this modulating effect is related to how quickly and well managed the pain is early in a healing process. If you can get on top of pain quickly after an injury, it seems to have a positive effect on how the body modulates and handles the perception of pain. Modulation is both inhibitory and facilitatory. Now, think about that. That means that our perception of pain and that modulating response that comes back to those receptors can inhibit the receipt of pain by those receptors. In other words, it can raise the threshold at which those receptors send a pain response up through the system, but it can also facilitate the ability of those receptors to sense pain. That means that if something occurs and sends a facilitatory modulating response back down the loop, guess what? You're going to actually have more pain than when you had originally. The pain will actually get worse, and it may be less of a stimulus required to make you feel the same amount of pain. And that's important to note because this seems to be related to previous experience, both in short-term and long-term, with pain. The body will send that modulating response back. And it's important to really remember that, because what we're seeing in a lot of the research, and I have links to the research I looked at, and you can probably find some on your own, there's a lot of great research out there that looks at how this is done and seems to point to early pain management as being key to getting ahead of this modulating response and having it have an inhibitory effect rather than a facilitatory effect. What do we think about when we think about pain management? Most often we think about analgesic medications and anesthesia medications, basically using drugs to manage our pain. And there's numerous things we use. We use NSAIDs, we use opioids, we have our acetaminophens, our Tylenols. There's lots of things we use. We have our general anesthetics and that help us sleep through the pain. Okay, all of these are medication responses, but they're not the only response, and we should remember that, because sometimes, for some reason or another, we are unable to use the amount of drugs or any drugs to manage certain types of pain, and we need to look in other directions. I like to think of rice, especially for that injury pain, especially the soft tissues and the extremities, sports injuries especially. You can think of rice, that's rest, ice, compression, and elevation. And all of these manage pain and inflammation and seem to do a good job without using analgesics all the time. When coupled with analgesics, they really raise the bar on managing pain. So that's important. Certainly, mobility is important as well, so we need to rest, but we also need to make sure the patient's getting up and moving around, and managing their pain is an important part of that process too. Distraction is a great way to manage pain. A lot of the medications basically distract the nervous system from pain. You know, the opioids are basically telling the body to ignore the pain, and it blocks those receptors for receiving pain at the central level. But there are other things we can do to distract patients, and there's a lot of studies in the pediatric sector on the positive effects of video games and television as ways to manage pediatric pain, because they tend to distract the patient from thinking about themselves and their pain. And these are just as valid and useful in their own way as using analgesics. And again, coupled together in a team approach with everything else, all of these things can be part of the pain process. Of course, we also have massage and other things we can use to distract patients from the pain. Prayer, meditation, giving them access to the internet, providing expanded hours for visitors. All of these things are part of the process of distraction. Pain management strategies. What do we need to think about when we think about managing pain? We need to understand what type of pain we're dealing with. Different types of pain have different causes. Different types of pain respond better to different types of treatments and different medications, even in the analgesic categories. Is it acute versus a chronic pain? Is this related to an acute injury, or perhaps related to a recovery process, to a surgery? I would consider that acute pain. It's related to a specific source and problem. Chronic pain is related to a longer-term issue. And so when patients have chronic pain, we're dealing with a different type of pain perception, and we may have to use different techniques to manage that pain. What's causing that pain? Is it background pain? Is it incidental pain, procedural pain, operative pain? One of the resources I found that was just a great a source was from the Wound Care Journal, and it looks at different ways to manage pain especially for patients that have a wound of some sort that is being managed by a wound care nurse. And the nice thing is it has a great chart that looks at different types of pain. And background pain are pain that's felt at rest from the site of the problem, the acute pain problem. So this is background pain that's always present unless we manage it directly. There's incidental pain that occurs when routine activities of the patient occur, when they cough, when they breathe. You know, a patient with broken ribs experiences pain incidental to taking a deep breath. And so this is why we need to manage that pain, because we certainly don't want to contribute to the onset of a pneumonia as patients continue shallow breathing to the point that they don't access their deep lung spaces. Procedural pain relates to medical procedures. Are we doing wound management? Are we doing a dressing change? Are we debriding a wound, cleaning a wound? Are we stitching a wound? Whatever the case may be, some surgical or ancillary medical procedure occurring to the wound site is what we would call procedural pain, and we need to think about that. And then operative pain, and this is caused by more severe interventions, operating on the patient, causing some of the wound ourselves, is a different type of pain. So all of these things are things we need to keep in mind, what's causing the pain, and then we manage them differently. If we have, we want to get the patient up to do some mobility and get into a chair, or go out and walk around the unit and get themselves up on their feet, we want to get ahead of that pain before it ever gets there and think about pain management a half hour or 15 or 20 minutes ahead of time, depending on what kind of pain management and route of pain management we're using, so that we can get them up and moving with less pain. If we're going to be performing a procedure, we're going to do a dressing change, we need to think about pain management before we go in and do that dressing change. And of course, then background pain is the pain we ask about whenever we go in and see our patients. You know, hey, how are you feeling any pain right now? How bad is it? That's background pain. That's the pain they're feeling while they're sitting there. If you say to them, does the pain get worse or better depending on what you do? And they say, no, it's just always there. That's background pain. There are lots of resources available, and I would urge you to look at what you have available in your facility or your office, wherever it is you may be, through your professional nursing organization. This is all, pain management is something that I think nurses own. And because we deal with the patients face-to-face throughout the course of every day, we are involved in helping them manage their pain. And we need to use the resources that are around us. It may be your pharmacist. What pain analgesics are there out there if the patient's not having success with a certain pain medication? Perhaps it's time to suggest to the prescriber, hey, I was talking to the pharmacist. This medication they're on isn't working as well. He suggests that we look at this pain medication, and you might want to talk to them, but we're seeing the patient isn't really being successful. Depends on how you manage that in your facility, but there are lots of resources. You might have a pain management nurse or a pain management physician that is part of your care team that helps you manage pain. So use the resources that are available to you, and if there aren't resources available, look outside your center for resources, and then be the person that gets those resources and has them available for everyone else to use. So what do we need to keep in mind as far as nursing considerations? First and foremost, and I said this earlier, pain is personal and individual. And that means it's personal to the patient themselves. Every patient is different. But it also means that pain is personal and individual to every pain event for that patient. If the patient was in getting gallbladder surgery a year ago and had that postoperative pain related to their gallbladder surgery, and then they come back to you with a head injury from a motor vehicle accident, that is a different pain incident. And so the pain associated with that and their perception of that pain is going to be different than it was from the previous time. And indeed may be affected by how well their pain was managed in the previous episode. Aggressive pain management heals. And I talked with pain management nurses in my capacity as host of the Nursing Notes Live podcast for the Campaign for Nursing's Future at Johnson & Johnson. And we talked to pain management nurses back in September. and that episode was released in October. When I talked to those pain management nurses, they all pointed to the recent studies that say patients whose pain is managed more aggressively heal faster. Something about just having pain diverts resources somehow in the body away from the healing process to manage pain. If we can manage pain externally through some intervention, we can help the pain use their internal resources, or help the patient use their internal resources to help manage their healing process. Use the resources you have available in your facility. Use the resources I provide here in the links that'll be out with this podcast. And I would urge you to check out the American Society of Pain Management Nurses website. They have some links and resources available there as well. So all of these tools are available. Your own nursing journal for your specialty probably has dealt with pain management over sometime recently in the past couple of years, and we'll be dealing with it again sometime recently in the upcoming next few years of articles. So look into your own resources to look at how to manage pain in your own specialty. Transfer pain care information when you transfer care to the next shift, or the next nurse, or the paramedics that are transporting to another facility, maybe to the rehab unit of another hospital. Whatever the case may be, transfer that pain care information. If you found something that works and you don't pass that information along, note it in the chart, and then make sure you pass it along to the next nurse and urge them to pass it on to their relief the next day, you are doing your patient a disservice. So really say to them, hey, this is what seems to be working for this patient. I had a lot of success by before I got him up and got him to walk around the floor, I got him some pain management, and I got it to him about a half hour ahead of time, and that seemed to work just fine. Telling your relief that, telling the next nurse on the shift that, helps them to handle that patient and manage that patient better. Nursing interventions work. You know, one of the reasons nurses own pain management is because sometimes it's the little things we do that make the biggest difference for our patients. You know, the caring touch, the sitting and spending a few moments chatting with them can have a huge impact on their perception of how they heal and their perception of even their pain. Distraction is part of the pain management process. You spending a few minutes talking to the patient and chatting with them is a distraction. You become one of their visitors at that point, and you can do that. Do the little things you do to make your patient comfortable. All of that helps to manage their pain. If they're able to rest better when they're in their bed, if they're more comfortable when they're in their bed, they aren't in as much pain. They aren't diverting resources to an ancillary pain that's associated with their back discomfort because of how they're being propped up that has nothing to do with their surgical incision site, but their back is sore because they're not comfortable. So think about the little nursing interventions that we do every single day, and don't shy away from continuing to improvise and do what you do best. Finally, educate patients, educate yourself, educate your coworkers and the rest of the staff about pain management. It's a team approach, and that team includes the patient. They need to let you know when the pain is coming back so you can stay ahead of the pain. You need to let the family members know about how you're managing the pain so they know what to expect, both if they're coming in before an elective procedure or if they're dealing with a post-operative or post-admission pain from whatever their cause is. You can help the patient's family members support the pain management of this patient. And certainly that helps when they go home as well. You're transferring care to somebody else. Pain management information is an important part of that. So I think this is all maybe pretty straightforward and easy to understand, but I wanted you to have a handle on it. I needed to review pain management physiology as well. And coming up soon, hopefully I'm going to be working on getting a pain management nurse to join me and talk about nursing and pain management specifically and some of the things that you might want to do. And if you have a comment or a question you'd like me to include in that segment, you know, send me an email to nursingshow@gmail.com. Put pain management in the subject line, and I can try to include that in an upcoming episode when I get together and locate our pain management nurse. I've got a couple of people I'm going to be talking to. We might even be able to pull a small panel together to talk about this. And I wanted to make sure your thoughts were included in that as well. Again, additional resources are available. I urge you to check out all of the resources. I've got several different journal articles that I found that are good resources that are listed in the show notes. And also, I would urge you to check out the Institute of Medicine report on pain management in America and see what they have to say, as well as checking in over at the National Society for Pain Management Nurses, because they have some great resources available on their site as well. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the program this week. And again, urge you to head over to nursingshow.com and find links to the news items and the tip information all provided in this week's show. Again, quick information presented here with some of my commentary and thoughts, but I really want you to go over and delve into how exactly it might apply to your nursing practice. And again, share your thoughts back with me. Let me know what you think of this episode, what you'd like to see more of or less of. And what do you think about my comments on some of those news items? You can always send those comments in to me here at nursingshow@gmail.com by email, or you can leave a comment right over on the Nursing Show site below any of the articles there or below the show notes for this episode. And leave your discussion there for everyone else to read your comments as well. You're the first time you've ever left a comment on the site, it'll take a little bit. I get an email and I have to approve it. But after that, once you've left an approved comment, pretty much you're allowed to go back and comment anytime you want without, and you should see it appear pretty quickly. So we want to make sure that the discussion continues about each and every episode over at the Nursing Show site. So head over to nursingshow.com and don't forget to reach out and get back in touch with me here at nursingshow@gmail.com. That's it. We'll go ahead and close out the show. I do want to remind you to check out and catch up with me via all of the social media sites. And you can find me under the handle PodMedic. That's related to my career as a paramedic as well. And you can find that at Facebook.com/PodMedic and Twitter.com/PodMedic. And don't forget to become a fan of the Nursing Show fan page on Facebook. That's Facebook.com/Nursing Show. Just click the like button at the top of the page. And then when I find interesting things to add there, or maybe another listener shares something there, you'll be able to see what it is over at the Nursing Show fan page if you are a Facebook user. So it's a great way to stay up to date with what's going on here at The Nursing Show. That's it for me. I'll go ahead and close out the show as I always do, reminding you that The Nursing Show comes out here every Friday. We try to get them out every Friday for you. And you can find it here also in iTunes and subscribe to it. Get it downloaded for free, however you'd like to. The links are right there over at nursingshow.com. I'm Jamie Davis. I'll be back again soon. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.